River Basin Ag and Water Desk is kind of a unique project that tries to cover the entire Mississippi River Basin as an ecosystem. The Mississippi River Basin is a really large part of the United States. It's about 42% of the whole continental U.S. That includes parts of 31 states. And we don't often get to fly at that higher level and really think about what is the bigger interconnected system here.
We have 10 reporters based at news outlets throughout the Mississippi River Basin, starting near the headwaters with the Star Tribune up in Minneapolis, ending with The Lens, which is based in New Orleans. But our reporters, which is what our fame reporters are called, primarily work for their local news outlets and their local editors. That's their primary responsibility. And about 20% of their time is devoted to regional desk coverage. We have about 50 outlets that have signed up to receive that coverage. So we're reaching millions of people if you just look at the readership of those news outlets. There are a lot of issues that are connected throughout the region, but there's never been a news outlet that serves the entire region of the basin and helps audiences to think of themselves as having a shared identity.
Our reporters are stars. The strength of the team that we have put together is really amazing. People are bringing in such a passion and some serious knowledge about how to cover the environment.
It's not clear how river communities will look a century from now, but most experts agree change is necessary to create a better and safer future. And the time to act is now, instead of waiting for the next flood. For NPR News, I'm Eva Tesfaye in Atchison County, Missouri.
And I'm Juan Pablo Ramirez Franco in Freeport, Illinois.
What happens in Illinois happens in Iowa, happens in Missouri, happens in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Louisiana. It happens all across these places. And so finding a way to tell news that makes sense for all of us at the same time, I think is very useful, and it really has some legs.
It's really exciting to see bylines appear all across the nation. I want to cover things that haven't been written about much or at all. This was finally the chance that I was able to invest the amount of time it would take and also have a travel budget to go around three states and kind of gauging their unique perspectives that they're bringing to a field in ag that we don't normally associate with the LGBTQ community.
The EPA just announced last October that this facility that's been in South Memphis, a predominantly Black low-income community, it's been emitting ethylene oxide since the 1970s. ETO is about 60 times more toxic than they previously believed. It's a cancer-causing chemical. Do you have a community that's just learning about their risk for the first time and being able to be here and field those questions and take them to the health department, take them to the EPA and get as many of those questions answered as possible, I think has been really valuable for the community.
Water quality isn't the best here in Iowa. With that comes with, you know, us having to deal with some of the pollution and contaminants in drinking water. So I try to integrate, you know, some solutions to stories like that. I don't ever want to leave readers in a state of hopelessness.
We didn't anticipate as much national interest before we started, but it has been happening, and we've found out that there really is a hunger for these kinds of stories. We feel like we're providing a real service. If you want people to be able to make good decisions for themselves, good decisions for their families, to be able to support policy or oppose policy, to make good choices in the election booth, you know, that all starts with good fact-based information. Verified, fact-checked, it's local to your community. In addition to that, we're bringing in that broader regional and national perspective, and we're bringing in those ideas about research and solutions and how we can work together better.
Tegan Wendland, I'm the editorial director, so I do the editing here at the team. I wonder if we could have everybody else who's on the team who's not up here just stand up really quick so you could see the rest of our 10 journalists who are in the house. Both journalists first. We love you. And then we've got a team of expert journalist mentors who are with us as well. So if you folks would just stand up real quick so they know who you are, that would be great. Thank you. Okay, so say hi to all of us.
Hi, I'm Benny Goldstein, and I'm an investigative reporter at Wisconsin Edge in Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi, I'm Brittany Miller. I'm the energy and environment reporter at the Gazette in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Hi, everybody. I'm Juan Pablo Ramirez-Franco at WNIJ Northern Public Radio, where I'm an environmental reporter.
All
right, awesome. I'm just going to give a little bit of background as to how this thing got started, and then I'm going to turn it over to the rest of our team for them to talk about the real work of doing the stories. So this was an interesting, you know, mix of a need that needed to be filled and the opportunity for funding, right, which is so crucial. So the University of Missouri, which is where I'm on the faculty, has a long history of agriculture journalism, and we have one of the oldest ag journalism schools in the country. However, unfortunately, a couple years ago, it actually shut down because there was not demand for ag journalists. It doesn't mean that there wasn't demand for coverage of agriculture. It just meant that the dynamics and the economics of the news industry had changed to the point that those people were not being hired. But we still saw the need. We still saw the interest. And in the Midwest, of course, that is what we think about 75% of the time. So we were interested in that. And then we had the opportunity from the Walton Family Foundation to put together a proposal for a program of how we would attempt to cover the Mississippi River Basin. And that led us into an interesting research phase where we kind of thought about how we could do this, what that might look like, got to dream and sort of look at other examples of similar and different networks that were out there. And we came up with this concept that is both local and regional at the same time. So we really wanted to support local journalism and to help build that back up. So we partnered with Report for America, which if you haven't heard of them, is a really great service-based journalism organization that puts reporters into places where journalism is needed, either a beat that's needed or a community that needs additional support. And they have their own fundraising operation that helps to support them. So we have 10 reporters through our partnership with Report for America. They are located in newsrooms throughout the basin, as you saw. And then we also have a team of advisors who are kind of mentors who work with us. And I will let the rest of the team kind of talk about how they do that work together and what that looks like. But basically, we've been going since June of last year, so not even a year yet. And we are pretty excited about what we've been able to do. I forget what our story count is at the moment, but it's somewhere over 400 stories. And more than 50 outlets have been signing up to receive our stories, so we distribute everything for free. And we're hoping to be able to expand a little bit more in the future. Stay tuned for that. So I think it's an interesting model. I'm not saying it's the only model, but it's something that we're trying, and I'll be really curious to see what comes out of the conversation today, to see what other ideas people bring to the table, thoughts about how we can do this work, different models for doing the work, and what that looks like. So really curious to hear everyone else's ideas as well. I'm going to go ahead and pass it on.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess I want to say we're not saying that we have it all figured out per se. There are a lot of local journalism collaboratives and regional journalism collaboratives that have come before us. But we're trying to do something kind of cool, which is think of an ecosystem as a news region. I kind of see state boundaries as being a bit of a vestige of colonial past and not really serving us in this age of reporting on climate issues, where I always say to Sarah, floodwaters don't know state boundaries, right? They don't stop at the state boundaries. So having reported at the NPR station in New Orleans for the past decade, I reported a lot on parishes, which are what we call counties down there, kind of dealing with local flooding issues and in some cases trying to push water back onto each other because they're trying to keep it up with their own people. And so I think it's pretty radical to consider, you know, the entire Mississippi River region as an ecosystem, as a news region, and to conceive of it in that way. So I grew up in Wisconsin on a rural farm in the middle of nowhere at the headwaters and lived there for most of my my life and ended up in Louisiana, and this has been a really cool way to try to combine my experience of, you know, growing up on a farm at the headwaters with the past 10 years of reporting on coastal issues down in Louisiana, climate change issues there. And I wonder if you three could kind of talk a little bit about your experience on the desk and, you know, what you've kind of gained from it and how it's helped you contextualize some of your local reporting where you're based.
So I'm one of the like more entry-level reporters on the desk. I originally grew up in Florida. I went to the University of Florida. I know there's at least one Gator in here. Go Gators! And then I moved to California to get a master's degree in science journalism at UC Santa Cruz. And then from there I went straight to Iowa. And so this was a part of the country I had never lived in before, which comes with its own, you know, unique set of environmental issues to report on. And so, and this was my first full-time reporting job. So it was a little bit intimidating to come into this really cool partnership, collaboration, and being surrounded by expert journalists has been so important for my growth, especially having one in my own newsroom, Erin, wherever she is. That has been really great for me as an entry-level journalist and someone who had just moved to the Midwest, because I really feel like I've learned a lot from them. So that's a good takeaway.
Don't be shy.
No, sure. When I think about like what I've really pulled out of the Ag and Water desk is, like you said, the expert journalist. Erin and I were just like DMing each other about the CO2 pipeline story that we're working on. We're like, hey, should we do a TikTok version of this? Like, would that be like a clever thing to do?
Yes.
And so I think it's not just Erin, it's like with all of these expert journalists, they'll tell us stuff like, oh wait, like, have you looked at this? Have you thought about this? And they'll really take our reporting to just like that next level. And make us think about our stories in ways that like we just, you know, because of the deadline, because of whatever reason, we weren't thinking about it in that way before. And I don't know, that's been huge for me.
Yeah, so I, before joining the Ag Desk and Report for America, I reported in rural Iowa for about 10 years, and in a general assignment capacity. So I hadn't ever, you know, been on a specific, you know, science-oriented beat full-time. It's been, you know, as Juan Pablo was saying, you know, very much a wealth of information, not only from our expert journalists, but from each other. You know, it's like a, you know, ever-present encyclopedia of information that we can, you know, build upon. If I need a source, you know, I can put out a query on our Slack channel, and, you know, within 5 minutes, I respond with people to go to. And, you know, I would also add that, you know, it's, you know, there's certainly, you know, from my perspective, a really high bar for science journalism, just because of the research that goes into it, and having to understand the science, but also transforming these really higher level, you know, policies and, you know, scientific findings into real stories. And so I think being able to find where we overlap in different states at a local level has been really valuable for kind of having these impactful stories.
And one kind of unexpected benefit, I think, of being in your investigative reporting position has been being able to do more dailies with us or do softer feature stories that you might be interested in, but that you wouldn't necessarily do for your local outlet. I think that's kind of cool. I think there's been a number of expected benefits, like more journalists and more journalism, and then unexpected benefits with this project. So it's interesting hearing from you guys. The number one thing I just heard is about the mentors, and kind of expected that they would be helpful, but I love to hear that. Also local sharing, so our outlets are sharing their local content on our story sharing platform. We didn't necessarily plan for that. We were just intending to create regional collaborative coverage that we would share with our network. But they're sharing their local stories, and that was Star Tribune stories are showing up in the Gazette and vice versa, so that's been really cool. Local collaborations has been really cool to see. So the Gazette working with Investigate Midwest on a like very Iowa-specific story, and the wide interest of just seeing you guys Science Friday and NPR and the AP. So I wonder if you can talk about some of the creative ways that we've worked together on some of our collaborations, like where we've had multiple people working on the same story, kind of leveraging how many people we have throughout the basin. So the PFAS one obviously comes to mind because both you and Bennett worked on that one together.
So that Piedmont story was, I want to say it was in November. The EPA filed this administrative order against this 3M plant that's located on, in Cordova, Illinois, right on the edge of the Mississippi River. Like, the rub there was that they had said that they had been causing PFAS contamination that was causing a, I think the quote is, a imminent and present danger. Is that right, Chloe?
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, it was a big problem. And so what we knew was that, okay, we have to get a story out very quickly about this situation, but then we have to have a story that's more granular about, like, what people are feeling, thinking, doing on the ground now that they have this information about their water sources. So what we did was very quickly, like, we huddled up and we're like, who do we have, what can we do, when do we send them out? And so basically, the way it worked out was that at the Aguilar desk, we're going to have like a PFAS brain trust, which is Chloe over there from the Star Tribune. And so they kind of are covering PFAS very, very usually. They cover a lot. So they know what they're talking about. And I lived in Illinois. And so for my part, I was going to head out there just like with my microphone, knock on doors, and like see what we can get. Iowa team and a little further south. But the Cedar Rapids Gazette sent over a photog, and like, we can't afford a photography person at WNIJ, so like, we wouldn't have the pictures we got without them. So really, it was like this way of like pulling resources from different news outlets to like really produce what I thought was a really good story.
Yeah, it was. And Pablo was on the ground, and then Bennett and Chloe supported that reporting from their offices and their collective knowledge. Did you say anything about that experience?
Yeah. Well, it was really great because I was able to borrow from, you know, what Pablo's reporting, even using, you know, his source material in ways that his radio story, I could expand on his reporting. And then in vice versa, being able to, you know, had helped me, learn how to conduct a radio interview, which I had, certainly never done. And then that was something
Do you want to talk any about your experience with collaborations or just kind of working together as a team?
Yeah, I was going to say I worked on a story with Josh and Sarah about agrivoltaics, which is this emerging practice of putting solar panels on top of crops. Reporting in Iowa, there's a lot of conflict between solar and ag interests. And so this, we thought, could be an interesting solution that we wanted to report on for the basin. But in Iowa, there wasn't any agrivoltaics research going on at the time. But in Indiana, where Sarah was based, there was. So she went out to this field that they were doing this research on. She got photos, interviews. I think she made a video, or her team made a video.
Our only video that we've done so far.
Nice.
TV partners.
Yeah. More to come, maybe. And then, you know, Josh did some great reporting, and I helped too. And so we ended up with this piece that came, it was kind of pieced together from reporting in Louisiana, Iowa, and Indiana, but one that we thought held interest across the basin as a whole. So that was a really cool experience. And that was my first project with the Ag and Water Desk, so that was like a good first project to work on. So
yeah, it's always amazing to me how many issues are interconnected across the basin, and that always is apparent during our Wednesday meetings. We get together every Wednesday morning and have a big Zoom call and just kind of talk about what we're all working on locally, and then we brainstorm what some regional stories could be or investigations we want to spend more time on. Then we'll kind of spin off and have a team, you know, working on carbon capture right now, for example, or looking into some question about the Army Corps. So those teams will spin off and work on that. and then we'll spend that time on Wednesdays just kind of brainstorming stuff. I don't know if anyone has some questions about how this works. We've only got a few minutes left. We're just kind of bragging about ourselves up here, but.
I love local journalism, so important. But maybe even less insulated against powerful interests than big newspapers the New York Times. So how do you make sure that your reporters can still have that integrity and not be influenced by local forces?
As in, like, the funding at their newsrooms and the
funding, yes.
Viability. It's a business question. I think Sarah could handle that a little bit better than me. It's a Report for America model, though, so all of our reporters are at Report for America. That's where their funding comes from, and then they're based at, some are based at nonprofits, and some are based at for-profits. So it's a very diverse landscape of news outlets that are participating in this.
Yeah, well, you did a good job of addressing that. So I think there's always going to be the risk of influence, and there's always going to be a challenge of where do we find our funding. So we have this model where we're getting funding from a variety of sources because the Walt Family Foundation is our primary funder, and we'll be looking to diversify that a little bit coming up. But then each newsroom is also putting in its own funding. So part of that comes from their own sources, and then they're supposed to be fundraising locally in their community. So the idea is that all of the funding is not coming from any one single source, but also that it should be more sustainable over time. We're not solely dependent on one source, so I think that's a beneficial thing. But in terms of influence and power, I think journalists have always had that challenge, and we maintain our editorial independence. We're very clear about that. So I think newsrooms have to just keep doing that in their local communities and really keep emphasizing that.
Get my exercise today.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Root. I'm the editor of Landscape Architecture Magazine, so I'm not a journalist, but a person who wants journalists to come work for us. An independent reporting network that's based in the places where we want stories is like, so excited. Can you just talk, I'm sort of new to this model. Can you talk a little bit about how newsrooms share your content and how that mechanism works with you guys?
Yeah, any news outlet can sign up to receive our content. We use AP's story share platform, so you'll get a login and then you can just download content as it's made available, and we would love for you to sign up. And then we also pitch our stuff around almost like freelancy sometimes. If we've got a really great story, I'll go and share it with Indian Country Today or other news outlets and be like, hey, look, this is available. You should pick it up. And then often that results in them signing up for the distribution network too. But it's really easy to do, and you can just do that on our website if you'd like.
Yes, and on some of the tables, there's this little postcard which does have a QR code. You can go to our website and find out more about how to sign up.
Yeah, anything,
Annie.
And it's free. Hi. I'd love to hear you guys talk about, from the Report for America standpoint, what it's like to work with students, because I know their program requires you to work with students, middle school and above. And also just what your connections are to your communities, if you all volunteer or go to meetings outside of work, what your relationship with your community is like.
Yeah, thanks for that question. As part of the positions, the RFA core members, as they're called, have to spend a certain percentage of their time doing volunteer work in their communities.
Yeah, so there's a lot of flexibility with respect to the volunteer work that we're doing. So I work at an after-school enrichment program that, while the students aren't, attempting to produce journalistic work, they're still publishing within student-led production that resembles a newspaper. But it's a focus on literary enrichment. And I think, we have set guidelines. You're supposed to do, 8 hours a month, roughly.
You want me to go? Thank you. I used, like Blake Bennett said, it's pretty flexible, or was for a while. I used to teach ESL. And then I shifted to doing these kind of journalist projects with high school students, and that's what I'm doing now. But with respect to like connection to the community, I report on Northern Illinois. I'm from Northern Illinois. Grew up there, learned how to multiply fractions there, read. I go to some meetings, not for work, here and there. I'm around.
Yeah, and my volunteering project, I work with the local Boys and Girls Club. They're between the ages of 5 and 14, so writing articles with, or having them write articles is a little bit difficult. So what I've been doing is we planned an Earth Day issue of our Kids Gazette, which is like a version of the Gazette for kids. And I had speakers come in, which included Aaron, the expert journalist at our newspaper, and local scientists, local environmentalists, and just had them kind of do some interactive activities with the kids to teach them about some aspect of science. Because I knew I wanted to do something science communication related, because that's, you know, what I do. I wanted to teach them about that. And so after every lesson, I would help them form some responses to like what they learned today. So they're writing about science and the ways that they can at that level. And yeah, that's actually getting published this upcoming Monday, like right after Earth Day.
And I definitely think I've become like more involved with the community since I've been in Iowa. Like I said, I had never even set foot in Iowa before I lived there. And it is an adjustment period to kind of do that, to start working in a place you've never been before. But I don't know, it's a very special community in Cedar Rapids, and it's a special newsroom that people are really supportive. And being part of the Ag and Water Desk, like putting us in direct connection with other journalists who are doing the same thing at times. You know, one couple, you grew up in your area, but a lot of us also moved from other places. And so having that support system has been really great too.
That's about all the time we have before we move over into our super fun brainstorm sessions. But you're welcome to chat with us and ask us what it's really like when, you know, our reporters are not on a stage in front of you all, because it certainly is not always simple and easy, and it is often very messy and complicated, and there are a lot of challenges that we have troubleshot along the way. So we look forward to brainstorming with you all about, you know, how you could maybe collaborate a little bit more or do similar models in your own watersheds.
As the person responsible for our distribution network, I just want to put in one last plug to please sign up to run our stories for free. There's the QR code of the little thing. Go to agwaterdesk.org. We send stuff out, you know, once or twice a week, typically. And you can localize them, do whatever you want with them. We send out audio from time to time. And
we fact-check the heck out of them.
Yep. It's really good. It's good stuff. And if you're in need of extra stories from the basement, please take advantage. We're here for you.
Awesome. Thanks to the whole team, the folks who are up here. Yeah.